and fuels all of humanity's hope and strength and joy. Love. Love is the antidote to division. Its warm intent flows through our veins and floods the chasms between us, sweeping away the detritus of judgment, anger, and hatred. The more we open the floodgates, the more power we have. In our opening to love, all the chemicals of evil and discord are washed away, and the inner serpent of solitude along with them. Who have we been avoiding or mistreating because of division? What parts of ourselves have we shut down out of fear that we would be deemed too different, unworthy, or unlovable? We must be aware enough to answer such questions and mature enough to seek resolution. Fortunately, love is in our nature and the most abundant resource in the universe, for it created and lives in all things. All we must do now is allow it back into our lives and direct it toward others. Unlike faith and action, ingredients willed to life by our choice, love lives both within and beyond us. Love is everywhere, the divine's cosmic thread woven through all that we see and sense. As we learn to follow and pull from this common thread, we recognize the oneness of which we are all part. We see that we are all made of the same purity, fighting the same demons, marching in our own ways to our own freedoms, all journeying back to love. Love completes our healing, for we can have all the faith and action in the world, but without love, there is no strength. It is love that gives faith its raw and divine powers, love that causes us to be courageous, to take actions that we would never take for ourselves. When love springs unfiltered from our hearts, then the last impulse of defiance is vanquished. Love is always the final and most complete cure to our inner demons. The Sword of Courage. We now know defiance and its three serpent heads. Doubt questions our worth and course of action. Delay breeds indolence. Division closes the mind and heart. In one creature, we find the cause of most human misery, for it is the lack of certainty, activity, and humanity that derails our destiny. It would be naive to believe that we can ever vanquish defiance once and for all, even if we defeat it in the moments that matter most in our lives, and this we must do. It will still return. Defiance is a noxious weed planted in us by society in constant dis-ease, often germinating from our own insecurity and neglect. It grows fast and keeps returning, sending out its brambles and runners throughout our lives. The only sure method of eradication is our constant persistence in pulling it out by its roots. This is an effort we must commit to and then recommit to daily. Happily, we know we are able to beat defiance back with faith, action, and love. Just as we have given defiance form, we can do the same for our weapon against it. Let us imagine our one needed weapon against our internal terrors as the Sword of Courage. It is a sword of unbending steel forged from that remarkable triumvirate, a strong hilt formed of faith, and an indestructible blade of action on one edge and love on the other. Let us remember this image of courage the next time defiance resists our progress, and use it to overpower the enemy. The moments we are able to wield courage are the moments that become the most defining in our lives. All great people of history, all the heroes and leaders and innovators who lit humanity's way out of darkness and ignorance, forged within themselves the courage to overcome their internal conflicts when it mattered most. In many ways, they're just like us. They worried. They procrastinated. They sometimes had lower opinions of their fellow human beings. But what made them celebrated, what pushed society forward, what gave birth to their legend, was their sheer will to overcome such impulses and to faithfully, actively, and lovingly fight for a better life for themselves and others. Let us learn from them. Let us master ourselves, and let us now add our own chapter of courage to the good book of humanity. Declaration 4. We shall advance with abandon. Cowards die many times before their deaths. The valiant never taste of death but once. William Shakespeare, Julius Caesar. As we overcome fear and defeat our internal demons, we must recalibrate our entire mindset toward advancement. Ours must become a life of courageous action and perpetual progress. The majority of the world's people are not advancing at the speed of which they are capable. They have not sought self-mastery, and so they lack the personal power to direct their energies. Wrong thinking and weak wills are preventing them from extending themselves fully toward their dreams. It is like watching a cheetah stroll lazily all its life, never powerfully stretching and leaping at the staggering speed within its potential. To reclaim our power, we must seek an immediate shift in our belief about how influential we can be in shaping our reality. We must understand that nothing in life, including our circumstances or potential, is fixed. Instead, we must believe that we can bend reality to our own preferences, crafting the lives we desire through disciplined learning and initiative. We mustn't wait for permission or perfect timing any longer. Instead, we must be courageous and self-reliant, moving forward at a moment's notice. We must see struggle as positive and necessary for our growth and ability to innovate and serve. And we must know all that we need is accessible in the now. There is abundance in this world to be had, and everything we need to begin the great quest toward a free and fulfilling life is already within us. Should we live from these beliefs, then we shall reach levels of motivation and happiness undreamed of by the timid masses. Our challenge is that we have been conditioned to believe the opposite of these things, that bold action or swift progress is somehow dangerous or reckless. But a certain degree of insanity and recklessness is necessary to advance or innovate anything, to make any new or remarkable or meaningful contributions. What great thing was ever accomplished without a little recklessness? So-called recklessness was required for the extraordinary to happen, crossing the oceans, ending slavery, rocketing man into space, building skyscrapers, decoding the genome, starting new businesses, and innovating entire industries. It is reckless to try something that has never been done, to move against convention, to begin before all conditions are good and preparations are perfected. But the bold know that to win, one must first begin. They also deeply understand that a degree of risk is inevitable and necessary should there be any real reward. Yes, any plunge into the unknown is reckless, but that's where the treasure lies. Sadly, even intelligent conversations about success today are shrouded in limiting advice. How many people have lost all grand ambitions for change and greatness by heeding the advice of the realists and the standard bearers of the status quo, who tell us to set safe and smart goals? But smart goals almost always end up being small goals, utterly predictable and absurdly measured small plans for small people who need certainty and safety to such a degree they cannot wade into the wide territory of the unknown where real vision and progress lives. No great innovation or human leap forward came from a predictable path or an idea that was immediately attainable or realistic. It's rare that these types of goals ever spark the imagination or fire the will of the human spirit. We live in a culture flooded with tasks and spreadsheets and work plans that inspire no heart, no drive, no courage. Should we want true change and a life of our own, we must not, under any circumstances, allow ourselves to settle on a vision or a calling or a change in any arena that is contrived by popular opinion versus our own heart. A truly free person does not fear bringing forth a desire that is unbounded and even scares them a little bit, something that will demand the best of themselves, that might rattle them but take them out of their own orbit and into the stratosphere of the remarkable. Our destiny hinges on a mindset for bold action. We gain power from again and again allowing ourselves to choose the kind of recklessness that allows us to be vulnerable, genuine, and brave in pursuit of our dreams. When our hearts yearn for action and growth, we should care little about what society says is possible or prudent. Let us judge for ourselves what is worth the risk. Let us decide what progress really means in life, as it surely means more than inching along like snails. Let us decide to take our first steps without knowing how the journey will turn out. If that defines us as reckless and crazy, then let us accept that fate and celebrate the fact that we shall not be cowards. Let us declare, we shall advance with abandon. Reality is bendable. This power begins with developing a mindset for real momentum. The first mark of such a mindset is believing that reality is bendable to our will. Those who lack this belief never advance with great power and constancy. Free and courageous people do not avoid their current circumstances, but see them as temporary. To those who are self-reliant, reality is not fixed, but rather fickle and moldable. They see their entire existence as something that can be shaped, toyed with, vastly improved. Nothing that exists today must exist forever. New ideas and new worlds can replace all that is known. Their only commitment is to creating the future they have imagined for themselves and their loved ones. The great say, reality can be shaped and changed by my direct actions, and so I will act with constancy to forge my ideal life. To them, their vision trumps reality. Their dreams have more weight than their circumstances because they know circumstances are alterable with enough sweat and toil and dedication. Victims and quitters take a different view. They often think their reality is fixed, determined by others outside themselves, immutable. For them, reality is all there is. They tell themselves, tomorrow is fated to be exactly like today and the days that came before it. There's nothing I can do. This is my reality. This is just the way it is and always will be. Today is merely something to plod through. What matters to them is surviving life, not shaping it. Consumed by the belief that nothing changes, these people have no cause to act or advance, nor do they have big visions for themselves. What would be the point? They think, well, if I can't change anything, I'll just settle for what random circumstance gives me. Those with this mindset seem to have missed the large sign we should have all crossed on our road to maturity. You are responsible for your reality. Decide what you want of the world and go make it happen. No clarity, no change. No goals, no growth. Ultimately, those sad souls who believe that reality cannot be shaped do very little in life and will unfortunately be judged as weak, irresponsible, or forgettable. If nature and humankind's ascent has proven anything, it is that real change is possible and inevitable. And should we direct it to improve our life and our species, it is our salvation. Let us take this truth into our minds and ask, what of my reality do I like and dislike? What areas of my life have I been taking a back seat on, hoping they would get better but failing to change my own reality? What would have to change? No, what would I have to change in order to feel more engaged, enthusiastic, and fulfilled with my life? These simple questions have the power to reconnect us with our lives and ultimately with our power. Action is the yardstick of character. Many people never jump into the ocean of their dreams because they feel they must have every possible answer before they leap. They ask, what is the direction of the wind? How many seconds until the water? How many breaths to take before the plunge? What is the precise proper angle for entry? Is anyone else jumping? How many have jumped before? How many strokes to shore? These are reasonable questions, but some will never take the leap, no matter what the answers. Even with overwhelming evidence that the leap is safe, regardless of how many swimmers have taken the exhilarating plunge, the timid will find something wrong in their search. A sure sign that this leap is a doomed descent. These are those who will find a reason they cannot achieve their dreams, no matter how many people around them have achieved theirs. A pathetic majority also never cross the line between gathering information and taking action. Theirs is a life of endless contemplation, of waiting for total knowledge and perfect conditions, neither of which ever happen. Thus, they are forever destined to be observers, not masters. Without making the actual attempt, without trial and strife, there can be no true knowledge, no progress, no high achievement, and no legend. Those who advance do so because they value action itself. They feel that positive, forward momentum, progress, is a reflection of their character, and so they take pride and satisfaction in actions toward that end. They think, if I am not taking significant action to advance and progress in life, I do not feel as happy, engaged, successful, or giving. Psychologically, much is at stake based on their sense of proactivity, growth, and advancement in life. It does not mean they are ruined by failure or in the slow moments of life. It simply means they have a bias toward going and growing. Let us remember that humankind must be measured by actions alone, not intentions. What we intend is of little importance when judging our character or gauging our happiness. Only action reveals our true selves. Only action moves us to mastery. Only action allows us to create, grow, connect, contribute, rise to our highest selves, and soar into the bright stratosphere of greatness. All else is merely thought, and there is a difference between intention and initiative. Nowhere is that difference more starkly apparent than in love. We can have the intent to love others, but without initiative, without real acts of respect, caring, and affection for another, intention alone remains useless, soulless. Thinking is not love. Giving is. Individually, we cannot gauge who we are without looking at our actions. We do not even know what we truly value without action, because our values are more than thoughts. Values are our ideals in motion, demonstrated through our interactions with others. All that we want to feel in life, happiness, joy, satisfaction, peace, success, love, can be felt only because of our actions. We can't just think about being happy without doing something that makes us feel happiness. Imagine happiness. It is sensed only when we have done what we feel would make us happy. Even if this means we simply sat down, closed our eyes, and practiced gratitude. The act of contemplating gratitude is an action generating happiness. We are joyful only if we are doing what we sense as joyful. We are satisfied only if we have done what satisfies us. We are successful only if we have done what is necessary to bring us success. We love ourselves only if we feel we deserve love by how we treat ourselves and others. Perhaps some take this too far and make doing things their only measure. But without question, more people do nothing, and that is why they are unhappy. Yes, we can simply focus on being, but is being not an action itself? Relaxing is an action. Meditating is an action. Dreaming is an action. These things bring us the emotions we desire. Our actions are also a reliable social measure of true character. How people consistently act toward us and others gives us the data we need to judge their values, goals, and worthiness of trust and attention. Attempting to gauge someone's character with anything other than their actions is like guessing what is at the core of their hearts and minds, and guessing leads only to assumptions and drama. But action tells us what we need to know. We needn't trust a man who says he is good-willed but has never demonstrated goodwill to another. We needn't believe the woman who says, "I love you," but then acts cruelly and without love. When action is required by the moment and a person does not act, we know him to be at best lazy and at worst a coward. Those who act cruelly are judged as cruel. Those who behave idiotically are judged as fools. And so we globalize an individual's personality based on one's tendency toward advancement. Those who do not advance in life are called slow, stifled, lazy, losers. Whether judgment is a good thing or a bad thing, and whether or not we are right or wrong, advancement is the yardstick we use to measure others. Culturally, progress rides on the backs of a willful and action-driven people. Our freedoms come to us because of the actions of previous generations who strove to contribute beyond themselves. Today, the yardstick of advancement is used to gauge the health of entire societies and countries. Those who are not advanced in the areas of health, economy, technology, and freedom are seen as backward, archaic, irrelevant, the dying regimes that drift along on tradition until a mighty gust of progress destroys them. If positive action is ultimately how we measure our lives, others, and our world, then let us bring it back to our daily consciousness and goals. Let us remember that when we take action, an invisible force gathers all around us, pulling in opportunities that align with our purpose, propelling us with momentum to our freedom. And so, let us have the courage to face ourselves and ask, am I taking enough bold and significant actions in order to advance my life and reach my full potential? If I were unafraid and acting from my highest self, what would I be doing to move forward in life? What steps must I take today and this week to begin dramatically advancing my health, career, family, and purpose? Permission is not required. Those who fail to advance in life are often immature. They are over-reliant on others for their care, happiness, and success, and so they believe that other people should help them make their choices or approve of their plans and actions. They still want mom and dad to point the way and give a nod of approval at each tentative step. They want their teachers to give them smiles and stars. They want their lovers and friends, their bosses and coworkers, their church and their culture to approve of their actions and be their constant cheerleaders. And the moment they don't get positive support urging them on, they stop. If they don't receive some sort of permission to be themselves or chase their dreams, they do not take those actions. They are trapped by a fear of criticism or abandonment. A long look across their lives reveals a tendency to be always waiting for permission and approval from others, like a teenager waiting for permission to go out. That is their eternal state of life, waiting for the nod of others. Great men and women don't give a damn if anyone approves. They rarely seek permission from the world because they know that the masses bound by mediocrity will never approve of anything that breaks convention or smacks of boldness and magic. They know that society has an abiding mistrust of mavericks, only, of course, until the maverick gathers abundance, power, and prestige. The great are clear with people about what they want and why, and if others criticize or judge their ideas, they take any useful feedback, discard the rest, and carry on. When people get upset or ask, "Who do you think you are?" the bold answer with strength and a readiness to defend and fight for their dreams. They do not limit their vision based on how many people nod. The belief that others do not need to grant them permission is palpable in their lives. Over and over, they begin tasks, projects, and initiatives without anyone's sign-off. They didn't need a certificate, a letter of approval, or a content smile from a caregiver. They moved. Let us remember this sad but sure truth. The only permission ever granted by a society is permission to follow its norms and traditions. No one will grant us permission to advance quickly because they fear being left behind or made a fool for clinging to a world already fading in relevance. With this knowledge, all that we can do once we have an idea for progress is share it openly with people, consulting intelligent sources that might make our path more successful. But we mustn't forever await approval. Gather information and go quickly. The most common sticking point is that we all desire to gain permission from those we trust and love. What of the woman who wants to move to a new city to chase her career ambitions, but faces an unsupportive spouse? As with all relationship questions, there is no easy answer. All we can hope is that, even should she compromise for a period of time, she will ultimately proceed in some way to follow her dreams. She must find a way to honor both her desires of love and growth. We must anticipate that taking actions that do not meet the approval of others will bring discord. People won't like our boldness. They will call our struggles crazy. There will be sadness and resistance from some who see us moving forward without their permission or without them. This is a reality that must be faced by all those who seek to realize their dreams and potential. Will we choose other people's opinions, preferences, and approval over our true hearts, desires, and growth? The answer to the question will dictate how much about the emotional joy and satisfaction we sense in life. Perhaps it is time to remember that a higher power granted us all the permission we need to follow our heart. The universe, nature, and God gave us power. It is not our duty to give it away by letting our choices be directed by others. Abundance is at hand. There isn't enough time. There aren't enough resources. The economy is bad. No one is making it anymore. There's not enough to go around. These are the cries of those blind to the universe's abundance. All those who have won major life victories have found that all the resources needed to win are within, and that most knowledge needed to succeed is acquired after action. Let us join their ranks and remember these truths. We do not need more time. We need a stronger reason to act so that we use time more effectively. We do not need to await more resources. We need to act, and we will find abundance comes to us. We do not need to wait for perfect conditions. We will find perfection in progress. We do not need to ask in order to receive. We need to give in order to receive. For in giving, we are given too. We cannot timidly wait for everything to fall into our laps. We will receive only as we rise and march, for destiny turns its ear to those without fear. These truths form the mindset of readiness and abundance that is needed to advance one's life. The successes of this world are often people who started from scratch. Although they had limited resources, they started anyway. They built businesses and careers, not because they were lucky, but because they believed that everything they needed to succeed would ultimately intersect with their actions. They knew that moving forward meant attracting attention, reward, and investment. They believed in abundance. Contrast this mindset with that of those driven by scarcity. Because they believe there is never enough, they never act. The entrepreneur who cannot see himself becoming wealthy chooses not to execute his ideas. The executive who believes the pie will always be too small refuses to mentor others because he'll be threatened if that person should ascend. The leader of a nation who fears others will take more than they will give, closes her borders, or limits her trade policy. With mindsets of scarcity, they make choice after choice to self-protect, to delay, to limit, to steal, to stop. And so let the notion of scarcity leave us completely. All that we need is abundantly within, and all good things will be attracted as we act in accordance with our dreams. It is but our own vision, will, resourcefulness, and discipline that is needed to begin. These will never be in scarce supply unless we choose to abandon them. Success is positive and necessary. Those who advance in life do so because they view progress and all its resultant successes, achievements, influence, and powers as a positive and necessary thing. Those doomed to the sidelines of life often mistakenly believe that success and its resultant powers must assuredly corrupt. This cannot be overly stated, so let us give it close attention. The doomed expect the outcomes of advancement to be negative, even if they are unconscious of such expectation. they secretly believe that all this struggle toward achievement must surely lead to a hell on earth where virtue cedes the field to vice, where they will have to sell out or compromise themselves. They believe that success and power must make us rotten, that surely friends and family must be left by the wayside as one ascends, that love of money replaces love of meaning, that success breeds selfishness, that there is never fulfillment, only the constant lust for more, that the higher one climbs, the lonelier and more miserable one becomes. They believe in hundreds of sad and misinformed ways that success must bear only bitter fruit. From where do such opinions rise? First, these assumptions come from an unenlightened mind blinded by scarcity and jealousy. It is sad but true, there are small-minded people among us who dislike, distrust, or hate those who succeed in life, because they falsely believe that for someone to win, surely someone must lose. There are also small people who truly wish ill for those who succeed, simply because they don't want to be left behind or forgotten as those around them get ahead, create more wealth, or become more influential. Seeing others who are succeeding beyond them makes them terribly uncomfortable and angry. It forces them to look in the mirror and realize they may have less luck, less opportunity, or less innate talent than others. Guilt might arise as they conclude that they have less drive, discipline, and resourcefulness. Then blame begins. Excuses bubble up. Anger boils, all leading to victimhood and disgust for those who seem happy and successful. From such scarcity and insecurity come the severe and misguided beliefs that those who have power are necessarily evil and corrupt, and that somehow all those people who are more successful than we are must surely be conspiring to hold us down. Those blinded by these assumptions cannot see their own responsibility for their reality, nor the opportunities available to all people. This is not to say that there are not some powerful forces in the world that are oppressive, such as political tyranny, financial corruption, and the irresponsible wielding of power. But even in such extremes, we must be responsible for our reactions against such unfairness, and responsible for our ambitions and actions beyond such rare realities. Regardless of any kind of suppression, should we not still own our lives, strive hard, fight, and seek without delay our own personal freedom? Are there not millions of stories of men and women who came from nothing, climbed above their circumstances, broke the ceilings, became captains of their fates, and crossed impossible seas despite all obstacles? Tyranny and evil are not excuses to limit our vision for our lives. We must be very careful, believing in any form that all those who have success and power are wicked, untrustworthy, hated, and that we ourselves would become bad if we had the same success and power, is desperate, ignorant, and dangerous. These thoughts destroy our motivation and progress in life. First, those who hate successful people as a group often do so from spite, not cause, for hatred can never have reason. Most who hate anyone, for that matter, usually do so out of ignorant prejudices born of fearful beliefs, rather than from any real experience with those they hate. It is a curious fact that those who hate successful people do not know many successful people. Our beliefs about success and wealth determine what we will pursue in life, and so we must be conscious. If we think success and power corrupt, our mind will not allow us to take action toward those things, and soon we will find ourselves trapped in a life of apathy and indifference. For how could we ever be successful if we dislike the very idea of success? The man who believes the home he is building may house the devil someday will soon put away his tools. To anticipate that we will become bad if we succeed, or to hate those who have succeeded, is a dastardly form of self-oppression, for it confines the hater to squalor. But what of the real tyrants and discriminators who hold us back, those who cause us pain when we try to move forward, those who prejudice against us because of our race, religion, gender, lifestyle, or background. To these bastards, we owe nothing. Our only recourse is even greater action toward our personal freedom in spite of them. Leave them, go around them, outwit them, forget them, but do not halt. On the other side of them, we shall celebrate by choosing to wield our own success and influence in more giving and conscious ways. Do not let these people blind us. The world's successful people are more good and giving than most imagine. The higher we climb in life, the more we realize just how hard everyone has worked to achieve anything. We might all benefit from realizing that the majority of successful people were often plagued by desperation, heartache, and poverty. Outside of the tiny few who have advanced in life without exerting any real effort, most people of influence earned their own way by discipline, struggle, and service. They broke the chains of their resentment against others and strove for their dreams, knowing no one ultimately held them back but themselves. They recognized that poverty of intelligence, morals, and courage was more crippling than lack of wealth could ever be. And so they strengthened their mind and forged their character with hard work and noble pursuits. What have the great done with the power they have earned through striving for freedom and high achievement? More good than ill. They took care of their families for generations. They built ships and schools. They laid road and rails. They hired people, enabling them to feed and educate their children and pay their mortgages. They raised their own children and enriched their communities. They gave to others and funded the causes that a wide swath of the world benefits from every day. They gave us something to believe in, to strive for, to model. Some did this by the sheer force of their desire and faith. Others started with a measure of wealth. All who sustained it embraced the values of work, progress, service, and freedom. Perhaps it is time we completely overcome our fears and egos, our insecurities and judgments, and learn to celebrate those who had the character and courage required to rise up, gain abundance, and serve greatly. Let us remember that with progress comes power, and with power, the greater possibility to enjoy life and serve others less fortunate. We can choose to use our success to change the world. To be sure, people of vice will commit more vice as they accrue more power. But we must also know that people of virtue will only spread more goodness as their influence grows. So let us work hard and enjoy the fruits of our labors without regret or small-mindedness. Let us stand on the right and generous side of might, sharing our riches and our influence with those who themselves strive for great lives and great contributions. Let us never feel we need to apologize for the power we came by through sweat and discipline. Instead, let us wield it against wickedness and in service to those who believe, as we do, in the glories of the growth and generosity that success affords us. Let this be our mindset, and we shall have our abundance and meaning. Struggle is to be expected and honored. To radically advance our lives, we will no doubt endure real struggle. We mustn't complain about it or fail to anticipate it. There was a time when striving through trial was a virtue. Struggle was a cherished consequence of higher ambitions. It was taught as the necessary effort of heroism and cultural advancement. It was the celebrated context in which we proved ourselves, bettered ourselves, and realized ourselves. Only there, in the depths of effort and hardship and frustration, could our weaknesses be exposed and expelled, our lives transformed, our dreams attained, our humanity advanced. Those who struggled with honor for mighty ends were not pitied, but admired and remembered across the span of time. We must remember that the power to direct our destiny comes only from a mindset that makes us willing to struggle through learning, effort, and growth. Yet the vast majority hate the struggle required to advance. They complain with great angst that the road to independence and abundance is too hard, too inconvenient, too slow. If there is no straight and speedy line to success, the journey never begins. People don't go back to school because it will take too long. They don't exercise because the results come too slowly. They don't fight for their dreams because it would require long nights stacked on top of already busy days. Now, entire generations are narrowing their vision and efforts, fearing the hardship of facing their limitations, trying new things, and developing new talents and skill sets. The outcome is a stunningly large segment of society that is overweight, uninformed, unskilled, unhappy. It's as though real effort, the kind that involves prolonged learning and arduous nights of frustration, is avoided. Any inconvenience has become a good excuse to stop progress. One might wonder if having the patience and persistence needed to accomplish anything worthwhile has become a thing of the past. Let us hope not, for it is only by focusing on advancing our lives that we can ever reach our potential and freedom. None of us will rise tomorrow and say, "I do not wish to advance my life." But our wishes are not what are measured at the end of tomorrow. Only our actions shall speak to who we are and what we really desire. So let us rise tomorrow with minds set for advancement. Let us be bold again. In the face of any concern, we can remember that all we need is within, that fortune favors the brave, and that action alone will illuminate the next step. Let us forever strive towards something we choose as meaningful, with a conviction so pure and powerful that we advance with grand leaps. We must commit ourselves to this cause of advancement for the sake of growth and giving. No longer shall we wait for permission, proper timing, or ease in rapidly progressing our lives. Let us go now. We have work to do, influence to gain, service to render, power to share, freedom to achieve for our loved ones. So let us advance and begin great things now. Declaration 5. We shall practice joy and gratitude. Gratitude bestows reverence, allowing us to encounter everyday epiphanies, those transcendent moments of awe that change forever how we experience life and the world. Sarah Bond Breathnuck. We have been gifted with a divine vitality and the accompanying powers of will, strength, and enthusiasm. Yet, where is the energized, heightened, exhilarated pulse we would expect from such a chosen and capable people? Why do we not hear more laughter and life? Where is the vibrant, mad fury and stunning passion of the fully engaged human? Where are the shining souls whose hearts beat with racing enthusiasms? Where are the magnetism and the fire? Where are the gratitude, the joy, the spark, and the charge? What happened to that miraculous life energy that brought us into existence? It seems that a great tidal wave of cynicism and pessimism has washed ashore and drowned the dreams of our people. The emotional energy of the world is flatlining. We can see this drained life energy in a stunning number of people's eyes and faces, in their conduct and conversations. There is no vitality, no freedom, no positivity in their attitude. Look how their faces seem too weathered, sallow, and stern for their age. Listen to how their conversations sound quiet and resigned, like whispers from a tired, disbanding tribe. Broaden the view and notice that most of our culture's buzz and excitement comes from a mass hysteria surrounding newfound opportunities for wealth or from the manufactured lives of the celebrity elite. Ours has become a world where a tragic number of people are more fascinated by materialism and the lives of distant narcissists than by their own life experience. Humans are not destined to be the lazy, tired, greedy, boring caricatures of gross abundance splashed before us today with such sensationalism. Sadly, from afar, it would appear that many people have become resigned, that they have given up their remarkable potential, that they are consenting to creep instead of soar, that they risk turning into a culture of slow-moving, low-aiming, negativity-spewing brats and blamers. One by one, we are seeing so many people for whom we care get sucked into the awful whirlpool of negativity. The energy of all this is palpable, and it must be our imperative to change it. It must be a main aim of our lives to rekindle the magic of life. We mustn't live in the darkness of our doubts, the shadows of the joyless, or the clutches of the energy vampires. Let us remember that life's purpose is to live freely, vibrantly, joyously, madly, consciously, lovingly, enthusiastically. Our nature gives us an intrinsic charge for such a life, and it is time to fire it once more. We are to be radiant, grateful, buoyant people, basking in our blessings and striving cheerfully toward our dreams under the bright and loving sunshine of the divine. It takes only will and conditioning to enjoy such a life. Let us make the choice to re-examine our attitude and orientation to life, to cultivate a more positive and present pulse. Let us declare we shall practice joy and gratitude. The jewel of life. The greatest of human freedoms is the ability to choose, at any moment, the palette of our emotional sky. We alone activate the very energy and emotion through which we experience life. If we wish to feel joy and gratitude in our lives, then we must direct our beliefs and behaviors in order to accomplish that end. And we must do it constantly, with such force and repetition that those emotions become the hues of our daily attitude. This is not easy work, but let it be our mission. Perhaps the severest requirement of the good life is to have the constancy of mind to maintain our joy and gratitude even amid hardship, pain, and injustice. This is the requirement of self-mastery and happiness. So it rests on our shoulders to notice when we feel bored or depressed and to force ourselves outside to engage with the world with a smile. It's up to us to appreciate our team even when a project is failing and to be thankful for our spouse even amid conflict. There can be no mastery of life if we cannot transform the energy we feel at any moment into cheerful engagement and deep appreciation. The self-labeled realists will tell us this is impossible. They, who have abandoned hope, will say that our world is too stressful and cruel, that our genetics and environment are destined to dominate our life and feelings. They will insist that our unconscious minds and reptilian impulses for fear and selfishness will rule the day no matter what we do. But let our own minds decide what is real and what is possible for us. Let our own eyes see among the bored and battered faces a starkly different, brighter lot. There are those whose faces are so alight with life that they serve as a blinding reminder amid the darkness of our time that joy and charisma and hope still exist. These are the energizers, the cheerful individuals who inspire and enliven those around them, even though their own backgrounds, genetics, and environments would give cause for them to be apathetic and detached. They, too, might have come from a broken home or poverty. But instead of choosing bitterness, they seem blissfully aware of and deeply thankful for their blessings, even when those blessings are fewer and more meager than others. These few, the energized and happy and thankful among us, are not lucky, nor are they to be envied. For their treasures are available to all of us. Their treasure is a freely chosen attitude. We are not blind to the fact that it is difficult to choose joy in an agitated, chaotic, often angry world. The social contagion of negativity spreads quickly because the human mind is susceptible. We are wired to sense and mirror the emotional energy around us. Seeing fear on someone's face can trigger a state of fear. Such emotional contagion had primitive benefits once. It was a blessing in times of grave danger, when the faces of our friends contorted in fear and they began to flee from some unseen threat. We saw their terrorized faces and automatically felt afraid and fled with them even before knowing the threat. This prevented us from being eaten or maimed by a prowling animal or murderous band of men. But this primal protection is now a mortal enemy. Without predators on the hunt for our flesh, with little to fear but fear itself, and in a world full of bored, fearful, sullen people, this mirroring impulse can ruin our lives. The energy of the masses is, at best, a low-tier energy, an emotionally bleak space created by a confused yet cynical people, operating on little sleep, high stress, and a frenetic desire to be somewhere else, with someone else, doing something else. We must ask ourselves, should I conform to their energy? And what of their thoughts and language? When the trite and bewildered cynic tells us that the world is going to hell, should we let our mind automatically seek to confirm this reality? Should we, too, allow our mind to cast around for something to complain about? Will we allow all the negativity and needy energy of the world to infiltrate and spoil our motivation or serenity? We mustn't become catastrophes of energetic conformity. We must use our consciousness to overpower our mirroring impulses. The more we automatically allow ourselves to sync with others' energy levels, unless they are the emotional energies of joy, love, and enthusiasm we ourselves wish to feel, the more we diminish our personal power. The more often we fall in line with the poor language and attitude of the drowning masses, the more we sound and look like victims. We must never forget that ours is a world of distracted people, craving personal freedom, but often choosing to operate from fear. And so if we aren't conscious with our will and vigilance, we risk sliding into their tragedy. Life can lose its vibrant aura and charm if we do not bend the energy of our minds toward positive engagement and appreciation. And so let us take back our focus and remember the riches. Joy is the jewel of life. Gratitude, the gold. The Joyous Master. What is the magic of the joyous few who illuminate the world? Where do they find such pleasure in life? And how do they exude such positivity? Theirs is a simple formula. The joyous are simply more conscious and consistent in their attempts to sense and generate joy and gratitude. They try harder, making joy a practice, a habit, a consistent condition of their character, an enduring social art amid glum and boring times. They have made it their aim to live a joyous life. That is all. No smoke, no mirrors, just those simple forces at work that sustain motivation, attention, and effort toward that which they desire. This answer is not popular. It isn't easy to admit that we do not try often or hard enough. But if joy is lacking in our lives, we must accept the clear truth that we are not often enough bending our will to joy. We can lie and say that joyful people have it easier than we do, but we all know happy people who have less fortune and health than we. Let us look at the instruction of those little happy people around us. Children have joy naturally. Their curiosity, lack of expectations, pleasure in small things, and full engagement in the moment are quick-sprouting seeds of joy. We can learn from them. What would happen if we put their natural inclinations for joy into our lives? Could we shift to being more curious about our immediate surroundings? Won't releasing expectation, especially the expectation that perfection should surround us everywhere we go, bring new delights? Can we take pleasure in small things and expecting good things to come our way? Surely, doing these things would change our lives. Let us return then to the instruction of happy children again and again. Be curious. Release expectation. Take pleasure in small things and expect good things. Cheerfully engage the moment. Let this become our practice, our mastery, and our art. Those who perfect bringing joy to every day of their lives are not unlike any other master. They work so hard at something that it soon becomes play. The greatest artists and athletes, the highest achieving executives and entrepreneurs, the happiest laborers and the most respected leaders all lose themselves in their work with great zeal and enthusiasm. Their efforts are like a game. They immerse themselves cheerfully as if playing to their strengths in a grand sandlot. They do not look angry, bewildered, frustrated, or restless, but rather relaxed, effortless. Even in chaos and turmoil, they meet struggle with intense and spirited joy. They engage in the challenge and honor it as if they expected it and accept it. Even amid the discomfort of growing complexity of building their lives and their careers, they often appear unfazed and nearly serene. They often sing while they toil and smile when perplexed and working. They spend and stretch themselves with devotion, willing themselves to remain positive and cheerful, knowing that one day their diligence will make them masters, knowing that one day they will have their victory and transcendence. These are the joyous masters. The joyous masters know that struggle does not always have to equal suffering. Let us learn from them and remember there can be joy and spirit in meeting life's demands, in stretching beyond comfort, in pushing through times of high exertion and low achievement. The joyous masters know that life is a journey, a trying and exciting adventure whose destination matters less than the passion and freedom felt along the way. Let us learn from them and remember that even when we are weary or uncertain, we can feel presence and eagerness for each moment. The joyous masters know that amid all the chaos and conflict, all the hurry and wickedness of the world, there is something solid within that is beautiful and steady and good. Like them, we can have the sense that our mind and soul are fresh and pure and clean, even as we slug it out in the thick mess of humanity. The joyous masters know that nothing good comes easily, but that all things can be met with peace. Like them, we can show grace even in the tightening grip of pain, and face our long trials with serenity and dignity and enthusiasm for a new day. The joyous master knows that in time, everyone will find their path. So the ultimate virtues are patience and love. Like them, we can know that there is no need to force or coerce others into our quest or joys. No matter how unwilling or undirected someone appears in this moment or this year, we know that all will find their way, eventually, to their own sense of freedom. Let us pray that we may find the will and strength to learn such things, to practice such things, to become such masters. The path of gratitude. We should not focus on the shadow in the corner and be so foolish as to miss the fact that the shadow exists only because the room is illuminated. There is light all around. There is much to be grateful for in the seemingly dark world, and so all we must do is pull our gaze from the shadow and look to the ocean of divine light and grace in which we are blessed to live. To the attuned and grateful, the cascade of the universe's blessings feels like a magnificent waterfall of luck and wonder. In searching for things to be grateful for, we need not look far. One must